Is Jacko's Sporting Almanac. And this week it's the story of how a coal miner's son from the Rhondda kept Manchester United going in their darkest hour and then led Wales to the World Cup finals in four astonishing months. Now, more than 20 years after his death, they're making a film about the Munich air disaster, and the part of Jimmy Murphy, the passionate little Welshman who rebuilt the club, is to be played by a very tall Scot, better known as Doctor Who, alias David Tennant.
I think he's a bit of an unsung hero of that time, actually, and Manchester United wouldn't have survived in the way it did without everything that Jimmy Murphy did, and he was reluctant to stand in the spotlight.
Reluctant? He'd do anything to avoid it, but that's not the point. At the very least, Murphy deserves some belated recognition for his role in raising a red phoenix from the ashes. After stopping to refuel at Munich en route to Manchester from a European Cup quarter-final success in Belgrade, the plane carrying the United party crashed on takeoff, killing 20 passengers, including 8 players. As the manager, Matt Busby, fought for his life, his assistant put a new team together in grievous circumstances. Jimmy Murphy did that and took United all the way to the FA Cup final.
You know, it was a great weight on his shoulders, I thought, but he came through it because of the sort of determined guy he was.
He made you believe that you were the greatest player, you were the best player in anything.
Jimmy Murphy did an unbelievable job from when we were like 16 years of age.
Ah, he was a lovely man, and when Sir Matt was very ill after the crash, Jimmy took over and did a tremendous job. They love personalities, they love characters, which is something that's lacking in the game today.
If it hadn't have been for Jimmy, I don't think they'd have been a Manchester United. I really don't.
A few weeks after Wembley, Murphy was off again for another once-in-a-lifetime experience, managing Wales in Sweden at the finals of the 1958 World Cup.
Let us be fair, without John Charles, I didn't think, together with practically everyone else, that we had an earthly.
Air on the back of your neck would stood up when he was with his team talks, because he was very blunt and to the point.
He knew that, you know, if we performed, we would give anybody a game. And we did go out sort of feeling we were in with a chance.
We've been to Manchester to talk to one of Murphy's proteges, the incomparable Nobby Stiles, and to one of Murphy's sons, Jimmy Jr. It seems strange that so many of the younger generation have never heard of him, which was one reason for going to Manchester, to find out about the man himself, and who better in that respect than Jimmy Murphy Jr.
One of the great tragedies of British sport, of course, was February 1958, when the Busby Babes crashed at Munich on their way home from playing Red Star. Now, I think initially that your mother thought your dad was on the plane.
Yes, I was at home at the time. I was a schoolboy. My college was, what, half a mile away, less than half a mile away. And round about 4 o'clock time, I was in the lounge with my mother. We had the transistor radio on, and the news came in, probably 4 o'clock, maybe 5 o'clock, to announce that the plane had crashed. And the first reaction of my mother was, oh dear God, your father. And it took us both, you know, 30 seconds or so to realise, no, he hadn't gone with the team. He'd been in Cardiff with the managing the Welsh team, although Matt had wanted Dad to go.
We played Israel at Cardiff in the World Cup, and I said to Matt, I'd rather be with the lads. See, I mean, brought up the lads, you want to be with them, that's it. Matt said, she got a job to do there. That's how that happened. I went out with Matt's wife, Jean, of course, and the other players, wives and sweethearts. And Jean and I went into the very sick room where they had a 50-50 chance of survival. I remember vividly, Barry, on the left was the pilot, as well as dear wife sat with him, unconscious. Across from him was Matt in an oxygen tent. So I went across there, lifted up the flap of this tent effort, and he just turned his head and he said, oh, it's you, Jimmy. And he said, keep the flag flying. You know?
Matt had wanted Dad to manage the Welsh team. That was his duty. And poor old Bert Wally, who had never flown with the first team before, he went on the plane and he died sitting next to Matt Busby on the plane, which would be my father's seat.
Wales had just qualified for the first time for the World Cup finals. Your father came back by train from Cardiff to Manchester that day. So how did he react to the disaster?
Well, my father arrived back at Old Trafford carrying a crate of oranges, which were the gift from the Israeli team, to give to the staff at Old Trafford. And one of the secretaries there was a lady called Alma George, and she gave my father the news, and my father just didn't understand what she was talking about. He just couldn't take it in. And when he realised that what she was telling him was true, and there were casualties, and quite a few casualties, I think he went into his office and just sat and cried for half an hour. And then came out and thought, I've got a job to do. And within hours he was making phone calls and preparing to go to Munich with some of the relatives.
No one realised I went through hell, come back and had no one to talk to really. Plenty of people around, but I'm talking at my 11 in soccer. I just found a team of 11. We played Sheffield Wednesday first at Old Trafford. Sheffield team were in, obviously, in the programme, but when I was Manchester United, there were no names at all. Because the team, we didn't know what the team would be in, etc. But they locked the gate, there were 66,000 here on the ground. The enthusiasm was terrific, terrific.
Within days of the crash, he somehow assembled a team to play Sheffield Wednesday in the fifth round of the Cup, and one of my treasured possessions is a copy of the match programme. The names on the team page had to be left blank because nobody had a clue as to their identity, except Murphy. Yet, just 12 weeks after the crash, he had taken United to Wembley against Bolton Wanderers.
Or is it? Yes, it's there! Two to Bolton! Loftus!
Jimmy Murphy did an unbelievable job from when we were like 16 years of age until 18, 19. So I remember him sending for me one day and I thought, God, what have I done wrong? And this was right after practice, 12:30-ish. So what, I knock on the door, come in, and Jimmy's sitting there. And he says, Dennis, he says, sit down. He says, what do you want to drink? I said, I'll have a cup of tea. No, I've not. He said, have a gin and tonic. And, you know, right after practice, he was a character. He always made you feel at home, and he was the sort of man you could feel you could, you know, any troubles or problems.
Trust.
Yeah. Great trust. Yeah. Great trust.
My feelings for a human being is a guy that will fight with you, will laugh with you, and will cry with you. And I swear to you, Jimmy Murphy had every one of those things. Matt Busby and Jimmy Murphy can never, ever, ever be mentioned apart. Yeah. They were made for each other. Yeah. And sadly, Jimmy was the one that had to quietly cry on scene to everybody at the time. Here you've a guy that grew up with those kids, Murphy, that had to see it all and keep his feelings to himself, except in privacy.
Harry Gregg and Dennis Violet, two of the Munich survivors who played that day at Wembley. Stiles, then a 15-year-old ground staff boy, had been in Murphy's youth team, the famous Busby Babes, at the time of the crash.
In 1957, I got invited to join Manchester United as an apprentice. And I was there 8 months when the crash happened. And if it hadn't have been for Jimmy, I don't think that they'd have been at Manchester United. I really don't. Because the club was absolutely devastated and in bits.
But he was that important to the club.
Oh, Jimmy was.
Why was it that he doesn't seem to have had the credit? Because it was Jimmy Murphy who made the Busby Babes, who created them, wasn't it?
Well, he created them and he was in charge. And I'd got into the youth team and we were on the way to, we were in the semi-finals again to win in the thing. I'd only been there 8 months, as I said, the crash happened. It just seemed as though everything was just going to stop. We went to every funeral. My dad was an undertaker. And he provided a car for Jimmy, and he took Jimmy everywhere, all the way round, you know, to the different funerals. And I was an altar boy on it, like, you know. So that's how I remember Munich.
Nobby Stiles still remembers how he heard the news, just as United fans were celebrating their team's victory over Red Star the day before.
We got the message that it got through, and everybody was delighted and enjoyed it. I got on the bus, went into town, walked across Piccadilly Gardens, bought a paper, and there was 8 photographs on the front, and they were all dead. I got off the bus, walked straight into St. Patrick's Church, where I went to school and whatever, and I just sat in there and I just cried. Because they were the most fantastic team. It was unbelievable. And my idol was... I tried to copy him, but I was nowhere near him. It was little Eddie Coleman. They used to call him Snake Hips, you know. So, as I say, Eddie Coleman's boots, I used to do special. All we did for the next few weeks, went to funeral. Jimmy Murphy was absolutely fantastic. Without Jimmy, I honestly do believe without Jimmy, the club would have folded.
How did he make you a better player?
Basically, what it was about, he used to say, the game is simple. Control and you pass it and you move. The great thing about Jimmy Murphy was, he made you believe that you were the greatest player, you were the best player in anything. He made you believe that. And this Manchester United, they were the best, you know what I mean? I was a defender and he loved me because I won the ball. I couldn't hit a 30, 40 yard pass like Bobby Charlton could, or whatever, like Duncan could, or whatever. My game was to win it and give it and win it and give it and win it. And basically it was, if there's a red shirt there, you pass it and you move. And your first touch is the most important. Because if you don't control it, the opposition's going to have it. It's so simple with Jimmy. But you worked on it, and you worked on it. I can remember like Duncan Edwards out with the ball before Munich, and he's just ramming it against the wall, banging like this, against a big wall just underneath the stand. And it's all about touch and feel and whatever. And then it's about understanding the game when you're playing it. But that was Jimmy. I mean, I owe him so much. I could never forget him, but he had this passion for the game. I mean, he was an amazing man. He was a really amazing man. He was never one for showing off or anything like that. He just got on. And I do believe, as I say, if Jimmy hadn't been there, I don't think they'd have been a Manchester United. I really don't. He just felt so proud when you went out there wearing that red shirt. But Jimmy gave you that, not just Matt. It was the two of them together. I loved playing for Jimmy.
When you went back to Old Trafford, Nobby, with the World Cup winner's medal, what did Jimmy Murphy say to you?
He said he was delighted for me, you know. But then he said, no, you've got to concentrate on Manchester United. That was it. It was most important, Manchester United. He was delighted for me that I'd won a World Cup medal and that we'd won the World Cup. But his thing was Manchester United.
2 years ago when the plaque was unveiled at Jimmy's home in the Rhondda, you went there, you spoke. How big an occasion was that for you?
I was so proud to be asked to come. Really was, because, as I said, I believe I owe Jimmy so much.
Nobby Stiles paying tribute to Jimmy Murphy, the saviour of Manchester United. I'm Peter Jackson. You're listening to Jacko's Sporting Almanac, featuring the most understated figure in the history of Manchester United, one affectionately referred to by Harry Gregg as a wee pot-bellied Welshman. Another survivor, Bill Foulkes, always wondered how Murphy coped with the recurring emotional trauma. A question for his son, Jimmy Jr.
Well, he's obviously a tough man. He came from mining stock. I mean, he was never a coal miner. He was destined to be a school teacher, according to his mother. But in some ways, he ended up being a teacher. He was a gifted piano player, and he played the organ in church. So, completely different to his tough brothers, but obviously he was a tough man as a footballer. His nickname when he played for Wales was Tapper, and people like Peter Doherty used to say, when we play against Wales, I always put on 2 pairs of shin pads, one round the back, because Jimmy's going to give my calves a tapping. So he must have had this inner resilience, inner strength, because to cope with, firstly, dealing with all the relatives. I mean, I've only found out in the last couple of years that he phoned the Whelan family in Dublin from Munich to tell them that the son was dead and that he'd never be forgotten at Manchester United, and that sort of thing must be horrendous. And then coming home and going to funerals. And we mustn't forget the press people. All of the press people were friends of my father's, and, you know, the press lost a hell of a lot of very, very good journalists all in one go. And I don't really know how he coped. I couldn't have coped with him. But he's a very, very strong man, obviously. But kept his emotions to himself. But I do know Harry Gregg went back to visit the people in hospital. and he was climbing up the outside stairs and he heard someone sobbing at the top of the stairs, and that was my dad. And Harry turned away and left him on his own. But the next time Harry saw my dad, it was as if nothing had happened. He'd got this half smile on his face. He had to lead the players back at the club.
People think now of the Busby Babes, but in many ways, Jimmy, should they not have been called something like Murphy's Marbles? So has he been shortchanged by history?
I think so. Matt never liked the title Busby Babes, but of the Busby Babes squad of 15 or 16, 12 of those players would have come through my father's hands in the junior team. I think Harry Gregg said when he arrived at Old Trafford, there were over 40 professionals and only five had cost a fee. All the rest had been produced by Bert Wally, my father, Joe Armstrong and the youth team system. I prefer to call it the youth team system rather than the Busby Babes system.
Jimmy Murphy, justifiably proud of his father's work, and if he never got due recognition, then the same could be said of Wales at the 1958 World Cup. But players like Cliff Jones of Spurs and Ken Jones, the reserve goalkeeper, knew what they were getting.
Jimmy Murphy sort of, he knew that, you know, if we performed, we would give anybody a game. And we did go out sort of feeling we were in with a chance and making things very difficult for the teams in our section.
He was 110% Welshman. The passion of the man was enough. It rubs off you. Air on the back of your neck would stood up when he was with his team talks because he was very blunt and to the point.
Another sort of unheralded story, I think, is Wales in Sweden in the 1958 World Cup finals, and your father succeeding almost against all the things that were wrong with the Football Association of Wales. I mean, there was a time at Hyde Park, wasn't it, where they had to go and train there because the training ground that apparently had been booked had not been booked.
The story I heard was the training ground had been booked, but they hadn't told the groundsman and he'd reseeded the pitch, so he wouldn't let them play there. So they were stuck in a quandary of what to do, and my father marched the players down the street and they went into Hyde Park, put some coats down and did a training session and played football. There were signs all around the park saying no ball games, but my father had a quiet word with the park keeper and he said, as long as you don't stay here more than an hour or two, I'll keep people away. But that's the sort of person he could. He could get the players on his side. He could motivate the players. Can you imagine the Welsh manager trying to do that with modern players? It just wouldn't happen. But times have changed.
Against all the odds, Wales simply kept refusing to be beaten. So much so that they rather exposed the Welsh FA's lack of faith. Anxious to avoid any unnecessary expense, they'd booked their flights home at the end of the pool stage, which all looked too silly for words, with their team still in the thick of it. So the gentlemen of the Welsh FA flew off to London and duly forked out for new tickets on the first available plane back to Stockholm. An epic playoff win over Hungary, beaten finalists, of course, 4 years earlier, brought Wales to a quarter-final against Brazil.
When we beat Hungary, I mean, Jim was really pleased because, as far as he was concerned, we had done a terrific job because nobody expected us to get any further than that.
The Welsh defence yet again clears up field, and I can tell you that this crowd in Gothenburg, this stadium holds about 50,000. There's at least 20,000 crowd here, and they're cheering like mad for Wales. Of course, Brazil have attacked mainly. We expected them to attack mainly. But personally, I thought there must be Brazilian goals.
That, you know, that we were as good as anybody, just to believe in ourselves.
Believe in themselves they did, but they were up against the unknown in a 17-year-old boy from Sao Paulo who scored his first international goal in the 66th minute. His name was very long, so they shortened it to four letters, Pelé, and his goal brought the Welsh fairy tale to an anticlimactic end.
One of the things I can vividly remember my father telling me is his pride when he arrived in Sweden. And at the airport, there were banners with the alphabetical name of each country. And to see, as he called, Little Wales among those countries, he said his heart was bursting with pride. But once he got there, he was a typical footballing man, my father. He treated the youth team game and the first team game and the Welsh international game with all the same passion. My father was very, very passionate Welshman. I can always recall in later life when he was in his 50s, 60s, early 70s, and World Cup draws had come around and European draws came round. He was always bemoaning the fact that Wales had a tough, tough draw, and look who England were playing. And I said, yes, but that's because they're ranked in certain... He said, no, they've always been lucky buggers. They always get the luck of the draw. Very, very passionate. He never, ever forgot where he came from. My father and Matt Busby were determined that the young players in their care, they would give them as much help as they can to be professional footballers, so they didn't have to go back to their villages to become miners or work in a factory or sweep the streets or work as dustbin men. They were determined to give these kids the best start in life they could. So all this grit, I think, was from his Welsh background. It was a tough, tough life. He had five brothers and sisters, all living in the same three-bedroom little end-terraced house. But that was what he was like. He was very, very passionate Welshman, which is incongruous, really, because he's called Jimmy Murphy. He's got this Irish name, but he was a Welshman, and he was a Welshman to his roots.
One of my favourite quotes, Jimmy Murphy, is, he said once, "I'm not happy with our tackling boys. We keep hurting them, but they keep getting up." Now, that would have been right up your street, Nobby, wouldn't it?
but that's not kicking him. You know what I mean? Jimmy had a passion. He had a passion about the game and about Manchester United. He was very proud of Manchester United, and he made you feel this way.
Bobby Charlton said he would not have been the player he became had it not been for Jimmy Murphy. Would you say the same about yourself?
Exactly. You have certain players in the team who win the ball. My job was to win the ball. Bobby couldn't win the ball, couldn't tackle anything. But he was the greatest player I've ever played with.
So, Nobby, could I put it to you that if Jimmy Murphy had not coached you and if he hadn't coached Bobby Charlton, England would not have won the World Cup in 1966?
I believe that.
Really?
I do believe that. I mean, Bobby Charlton, for me, was the best player in the World Cup, without a shadow of a doubt, you know.
Do you have a theory then as to why he has not got the credit? Everybody talks about Clough and Taylor, they talk about Alisson and Mercer, but they don't talk about Busby and Murphy, do they?
No, because them two knew how good they were. They don't get the thing written about them, no, but the two of them together, Matt and Jimmy, they had that confidence in themselves, you know.
Your father, though, was happier out of the limelight, was he not? And happy, perhaps, when Busby came back, took over the reins again, and then, of course, the ultimate climax, winning the European Cup in 1968. How did your father enjoy that?
Oh, he loved it. This is what they've been building for, the team in the 50s, a brand-new team, virtually, of mainly younger people, and they were reaching semi-finals of the European Cup. Surely they must have won it as they matured. Then the crash happened, and it took 10 years of developing, bringing through more players, Nobby Stiles, David Sadler, Johnny Aston, George Best, obviously. So to win the European Cup in 1968, he was just thrilled, absolutely thrilled. I think it's Bill Fowkes who said that 50% of our success in Europe was down to Jimmy's motivational skills.
By then your dad had been much in demand. He'd been offered managerial jobs at places as far apart as Arsenal and Juventus. And I remember reading once that he turned them down by saying, "How can you put a price on loyalty?" Do you think now, looking back, Jimmy, that Manchester United could have been more loyal to him?
Probably, yes, but this is football, isn't it? Football's a big business. A player is lauded while he's there, and as soon as he leaves, he's forgotten and somebody else comes in. But for what my father did for Manchester United over 25 years and later, then possibly yes. I'd just be happy if he was just remembered and got a bit more publicity so that the current fans knew who he was and what he did for the club. And they do occasionally, once a year when the Munich air crash comes round, then he gets a bit of publicity. But perhaps they should be more put out about my dad.
Although you say he's forgotten, Jimmy, by people who matter, he hasn't, of course. Least of all, Sir Alex Ferguson. And when he first came to the club, did he not go straight to your father's home in Poynton and ask him what was wrong with United?
Certainly within the first couple of weeks of Alex being at Old Trafford, he spent a couple of hours with my dad in Poynton, and my dad said, you need to sort out the youth team system because there isn't one. And I think Alec went back, and Nobby Styles and Brian Kidd were immediately recruited to set things in motion on the recruitment side and the coaching side. And United have blossomed since then.
It seems to me that belatedly a lot of recognition is coming your dad's way. There's been a play in Belfast, and now, of course, there's going to be a film about Munich and United of that time. Now, explain to me, Jimmy, how David Tennant, a very tall Scot, is going to fit the bill of playing a short Welshman.
I met David Tennant on the 17th of November last year at my brother's house, Nick. We asked him that question. He said, I'm a very good actor.
This is one of those stories that live in people's memories. Whether you were alive then or not, it's something that everyone knows happened. It was such an extraordinary, shocking event. And of course you feel a huge responsibility to tell the story properly and truthfully and to bear witness to those people who are no longer with us.
I was playing snooker a few days after I'd met David Tennant, and an old friend of mine came in and said, oh, I believe they're doing a film about Manchester United and the Munich air disaster. So I said, yeah. He said, and David Tennant's playing Matt Busby. I said, no, he's not. He's playing my father. He said, oh, someone told me that David Tennant was playing the lead character. I said, exactly. After Munich, my father was a lead character.
Jimmy Murphy died in 1989. 20 years later, Nobby Styles and other members of the old Busby Babes made a pilgrimage to the Rhondda for the unveiling of a blue plaque at Murphy's boyhood home in Pentre. Nobby will tell you straight that if it hadn't been for Jimmy Murphy, England would probably never have won the World Cup in 1966, because he, for one, wouldn't have been there. And Bobby Charlton, the other babe at Wembley that day, will tell you pretty much the same, that he couldn't have wished for a better coach than Jimmy Murphy. I'm Peter Jackson, and I'll be back same time next week with the story of another Welsh great whose like we will never see again. Jacko's Sporting Almanac is a Parog production for BBC Radio Wales.